From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 12th day of April, 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Arlen Suderman of Farm Futures Magazine. Dan Zwicker is on vacation today. And a bit later in the program, we'll talk about the cash grain market with TGM's Matt Bennett out of Windsor, Illinois. In agricultural news, U.S. EPA has denied a petition that would have taken 2,4-D herbicide off the market. U.S. FDA wants livestock producers to reduce antibiotic use. And the World Bank says the Chinese economy, well, it's a slowing. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly, and then he'll bring us this week's edition of In My Backyard with Lisa Braltz. Of course, as we close out our half hour together, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast with meteorologist Peter Levitt on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago from the CME Group on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day mostly higher. May contract and the soft red winter wheat up 11 and a quarter cents. The settlement price there, $6.39 and a quarter. July at 644 and a half, 11 higher. September at 657, up 6 and a half. The hard red in Kansas City finished the July at $6.62 and a quarter, up 8 and a half cents. Back in Chicago from the corn pit, nearby May contract, $6.37 and a half, 1 and 1/2 cents higher. July at $6.29, up 2. September at $5.64 and a half in the corn pit, a quarter higher. In December, futures were unchanged at $5.46 and 3/4. March corn, $5.55, down a penny and 3/4. The May contract at $5.63 and a quarter. That's for next year, down 1 and 1/2 cents. And July of next year, down 2 at $5.70 and a half, all the way to December of 2013, a penny higher at $5.46 and a half. May beans at $14.41, up 19. July at $14.44 and a half, up 20 and a quarter. August contract 19 and 3/4 higher at $14.32 a bushel. In November, beans at $13.72 and 3/4, up 13 and 3/4. January futures at $13.73 and a quarter, up 11 and 3/4. Bean meal at $3.94.60, up 7.80. Bean oil at $57.23, 78 cents higher. Live cattle futures finished the nearby April at $121.25, up $2.87 and a half. June at $117.15, up $2.10. April feeders at $151.10, up $2.50. And April lean hogs at $83.52 and a half, up 35 cents. This is the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby May crude oil futures for the afternoon at $103.64 a barrel, up 94 cents for the day. Ethanol at $2.24 and a tenth. That's a half a cent higher on its delayed, about 10 minutes behind. Natural gas at $1.98 and 9 tenths. That's up a half a cent as well. Heating oil or diesel fuel, $5.05 and a tenth of a cent. At $3.16 and 6 tenths of a cent on the day, and the gold futures at $16.79 and 50. That's up $20.50. The dollar at 79.27, down 0.52. The CRB at 305.64, 3.54 higher on the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like, as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Yet sunny skies, a high of 62 degrees with a south wind at about 8 miles an hour. Tonight, increasing clouds, a low of 40 degrees with a southeast wind at 6 to 9 miles an hour. And then on Friday, a 30% chance of showers, a few thunderstorms. It'll be mostly cloudy, a high of 64. Breezy with a south-southeast wind at 10 to 20, gusting all the way to 30 miles an hour. And Friday night, a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy and 55. Saturday, showers and thunderstorms. It'll be cloudy, of course, a high of 73 with a gusty wind all the way to 30. And then Saturday night, a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, a low of 62. Sunday, showers and thunderstorms and 74. Sunday night, showers and thunderstorms and 59. Monday, showers and thunderstorms and 69. And Monday night, showers and thunderstorms and 49. By the time we get to Tuesday, showers and thunderstorms still around and 58. Tuesday night, mostly cloudy, finally, and a low of 40. And Wednesday, sunny and 58. We'll have more on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour. We'll talk about the Midwest, the nation, and the globe with Peter Levitt.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker is on vacation this week in his stead. Arlen Suderman joins us from Farm Futures and Farm Futures Magazine. Good afternoon to you, Arlen. Thank you for taking the time with us today.
Good to be here, Todd.
What's your feeling about the last set of USDA market numbers and reports that were released, the WASDE figures? Maybe put those into context with what you think might be put in the ground in terms of number of acres and some of the work that you folks have done.
Well, it's certainly making those of us who are analysts earn our keep this year, that's for sure. I would call USDA's numbers curious. There's a number of questions that it raises, more so than answers. It's also important to keep in mind that its March 30th stocks report was produced by the NAST division of USDA versus the supply and demand report released on Tuesday of this week was produced by the WASDE group. And it's a totally different group using different methodology. And usually you assume that they're going to be utilizing the stocks numbers, and I give them credit that they assume that they did use the stocks numbers from NAS, but they are given that subjective ability to provide interpretation and projections, and that's where the differences come between the two reports.
As you take a look at what's been happening in the weather forecast, lots of corn in the ground here in our part of the world, in Illinois, 17% of long in planting as of the 8th day of April. And USDA, actually, in those WASDE numbers, also made remarks about the speed at which producers might put the corn crop in the ground and how that would work into the end of the marketing season. Do we have any problems going forward in that type of thought process?
Well, USDA, assuming we'll have early harvested corn, and this freezing temperatures we've had this week have certainly set that back. Some of the earliest fields probably did sustain significant damage. Some of the other fields that were 2 to 3 leaf stage, the growing point's probably okay, and while the top looks poorly, we're going to see that growing point emerge through there. Regardless, we have pulled soil temperatures back closer to that 50-degree level. We're continuing to cool them down, and that's going to slow down the progress some. I was noticing this morning a number of farmers commenting how they were planting with frost on the ground, and my question is, why? It's still plenty early, and I know after the last couple of years when rains kept many farmers out early, particularly in the eastern Midwest, they're anxious to get it done this year, particularly hoping to get an early premium with tight old crop stocks. But there's still, this week is a reminder, there is a risk to doing so.
Where are your offices located?
Our offices are located, well, my office is in Wichita, Kansas. Our Farm Future staff is spread out throughout the country.
Right, and so there in Kansas, you have a good view of some of the places that have developed corn as a primary crop in recent years, Kansas being one of them, South Dakota being another. Actually, if you look at the USDA numbers, South Dakota now looks like a really good part of the Corn Belt. Would you agree with that, that those numbers in terms of yield and production, that South Dakota really can manage that kind of crop?
Well, it's a totally different growing environment that we see out here. And one of the keys is really overnight low temperatures, where we do get the daytime heat, but we get the lower humidities, which drops nighttime temperatures down, and the corn really thrives in that. But at the same time, to expect the same type of consistency in high yields in the plains is what you see in Iowa, Illinois, is a little bit deceptive. I think if anyone given a choice, we'd rather have the growing conditions year in, year out that we see in Iowa or Illinois when you combine climate and soil. But with the new hybrids that we have and the new ability to what we've learned about managing the crop, areas of the plains can certainly contribute a great deal to the crop. But I think overall it tends to pull the national average yield down a little bit, making it tough to maintain the same yield curve climb that we had been seeing over the last 10 to 20 years.
Yeah, I've got another question on the yield curve climb, and I'm assuming you have fairly large producers in your area as opposed to smaller ones based on coming off of the winter wheat rotations. As the average size of the farm gets bigger, does management make the curve for yields go down?
Well, that's been a debate that's gone on for some time, and a lot of the data that I've looked at would seem to suggest that the larger farms that have survived have done so because they've been very good at A, managing the technology, and at B, managing their employment help. And so they've been able to continue the yield curve increase over those acres. Now, obviously, there are variations that, in management ability, both the small and the large, but by and large, those who have gotten large have done so because they have exceeded in managing the business of the farm. There does come to a level that there's a limit to each farmer's management ability that's different for each one, but I don't think that that has been a significant factor in the yield curve.
Let's come back now to the price of commodities. What are you thinking for both new crop corn and soybeans?
For new crop corn, the assumption is going to be that it's a big crop until the weather does something to raise concerns otherwise. We seem to have good value right in the 5.25 to 5.50 level. I do believe that if, in fact, we do see an El Nino weather pattern set in with mild temperatures this summer and increased rainfall, that, in fact, we could see a harvest low probe below $4. I believe that would be a spike bottom. When you can look at the tight global stocks, and particularly China's reserve being so tight, I think we'd see a big surge in export demand as well as in domestic demand as well. And so demand would exceed expectations dramatically, and the price would bounce back up. But I think we have that weakness or that potential to do that. As you look at new crop soybeans, it's a little different scenario. Soybeans have not been expanding globally like corn has been. In fact, quite the opposite has been true. Farmers around the globe have been focusing on corn at the expense of soybean acreage. And so we're starting to chew down on those stocks when China and East Asia needs that protein in order to produce the meat that its population wants. And so what the market needs to do is buy more acreage, and it's going to have to do that in Brazil. When you take into account the currency exchange rates, I think that indicates that we probably won't spend much time below $12, and I'd see a strong floor at $11 that we would probably bounce back off of.
Arlen, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Arlen Suderman is with Farm Futures and Farm Futures Magazine. You can find him at farmfutures.com if you'd like. Joined us here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. Dan Zwicker, of course, is on vacation this week and should join us again next week. Now, this is the CMR. You can always find us at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find on the opening page now a link to a few pictures that I took last night of some frosted corn here in Champaign County, and then a pretty nice wheat field in Logan County near Mount Pulaski, and some little two-leaf frosted corn that came near Elkhart in Logan County. So if you want to get a look at some photos of what the frosty temperatures and the kind of damage it might have done to some of the fields that were up and growing in the last few days and above ground, you can do that at willag.org. Dave Dickey will be here in just a moment. He'll help us take a look at the agricultural newscast for the afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 95 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
In agricultural news, the EPA has denied a petition seeking cancellation of all registrations for the popular herbicide ingredient 2,4-D, used on millions of U.S. farm acres to control broadleaf weeds. It is found in about 600 products registered for agriculture, residential, industrial, and aquatic uses. In a petition filed on November 6th of 2008, the National Resources Defense Council asked EPA to cancel all product registrations and revoke all legal residue limits in food for the herbicide. The World Bank has cut its growth forecast for China today, adding to warnings the world's second largest economy might slow too abruptly. The bank says that China's growth rate is projected at 8.2%, that down from 8.4%. Beijing is trying to steer growth that spiked to 10.4% in 2010. Import growth declined in March in China to 5.5% from 7.7% in the January-February period, a possible sign that Chinese domestic demand might be weakening. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration said yesterday that farmers need to reduce their use of antibiotics in swine, cattle, and poultry to keep the drugs from becoming ineffective against human infections. The FDA singled out the widespread practice of using antibiotics to spur growth in food-producing animals and said it has to be phased out. Farm animals in the U.S. consumed 29.1 million pounds of antibiotics in 2010. In one of two guidance documents disclosed yesterday, the FDA is instructing drug companies to remove growth promotion as a valid use for the antibiotics. The World Trade Organization says the growth in global exports is expected to slow to a 3.7% rate in 2012. In its annual report released this morning, the World Trade Organization said that the growth rate for exports in 2011 was just 5%, a sharp deceleration from the 13.8% in 2010. Strategic Grains today downwardly revised its estimate for the European Union's 2012-13 grain harvest by 5.5 million metric tons to 282.8 million tons. The analyst group estimated that 6% of the area originally sown with winter crops will need to be replanted as a result of severe frosts in February. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Common Ground Food Co-op in Lincoln Square Mall, featuring organic and local foods grown right here in Illinois.
Hi, this is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. Coming up next, Lisa Brotz learns a few things about slow money, risk, and investment in small local food enterprises in our latest edition of In My Backyard.
Winter is a season when food communities everywhere hold their annual conferences, both to assess the season just finished and the one looming on the horizon. So I know it wasn't exactly in my backyard, but I attended the OFA conference. OFA is the Ohio Ecological Food and Farm Association, in February, because the keynote speaker was Woody Tash, founder of Slow Money and author of the book Inquiries into the Nature of Slow Money, Investing as if Food, Farms, and Fertility Mattered. Not familiar with slow money? We've heard the adjective slow applied here and there over the years. Slow food springs immediately to my mind anyway, as a response to our fast and getting faster culture, and slow money is no different. The basic idea is to move at least some of the money we invest in places far away, in businesses we'll never see, back into our own communities, and especially into small local food enterprise. A lot of slow money is about finance, but money affects our social and physical environments, which is something all of us understand. Woody Tash isn't what I expected. He's not a farmer with a story. He's not a food writer telling us a story. And he's not an academic telling us why stories matter. He's a finance guy, albeit a finance guy who was interested in seeing money fund socially and environmentally aware projects. But his current chosen work, after 3 decades kicking around venture capital, philanthropy, and social investing, is to convince people to move some of their money out of what we currently call traditional investment and into small local food enterprise. He sums it up thusly.
In the aggregate, we talk about getting 1 million Americans to invest 1% of their money in local food systems within a decade. That doesn't mean they're all going to do it through slow money, but that's an aspirational goal that we want to get a lot of people doing a little bit near where they live.
Slow Money is a national organization dedicated to getting this across. And currently in the United States, there are 13 chapters that have emerged in 18 or so months since the national organization was formed. These 13 chapters have invested, with Slow Money's help, $14 million in 95 local food projects, farms, equipment, local food distribution, businesses, and other endeavors. Tash estimates that 10 more chapters will start working with the organization in 2012 to funnel more money into similar projects. That's a lot of money, and some of the funded food projects are large. But what about people who don't have a lot of money to invest, say someone like me, but still wanted to invest in some sort of local food enterprise, something a little smaller? Is that still slow money?
If you were getting together with your neighbors and you really did find someone who wanted to start a little composting thing and they needed $500 for their first load of something or other, you would probably find a way to chip in and do it with them. The point is you got to have the jargon is social capital, but it's really just community relationships and trust. We were talking about trust this morning, where people are committed to finding some things to do. However big or small, to me, doesn't matter.
The biggest question at the conference, however, was about financial risk. One woman, a banker, stood up during a question and answer session during the conference and told Tash she thought what he was proposing, moving money out of these traditional investments and into something new, was irresponsible.
I say, is it really riskier to invest in a farm down the street when you know the farmer, you know where the farm is, you know who the markets are for the farm's produce? Maybe the farmer needs a tractor. Maybe he wants to expand his marketing a little bit. Maybe he needs some other equipment. Yes, that is risky, but life is risky. You know, I'd rather take some of my money out of those big global risks and bring the risks closer to home and things that I understand more.
He was having dinner with her later that night. I should probably find out how that went. Remember, slow and steady wins the race. This is Lisa Braltz for In My Backyard.
Lisa Braltz's stories can also be heard on our website, WILLAG.org. Click on the In My Backyard link in the right navigation window. And you can also read her occasional blogs at majorprogression.wordpress.com.
Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. On this Thursday afternoon, time to check the cash grain market. On the phone line with us, Matt Bennett of TGM in Windsor. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Did you far enough south that you made it through the frosty conditions okay?
Yeah, we definitely had some areas that were impacted. I don't know that the corn's been impacted to a great deal. There really, in our immediate area, isn't a whole lot of fields that are over an inch or two tall. So I'm assuming if they're affected that, you know, they'll maybe get wilted over and then come right back up. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I haven't heard a whole lot of anybody too worried just yet.
Yep, by now, most people have seen the photos that I sent around this morning, but I know where to look. And
yeah.
So I tried to make sure that everybody understood that I knew where to look. But it's kind of fun to look at pretty rough fields, and they're out. You can find them at willag.org if you want. Tell me about the cash grain segment at this point. Producers probably in the field and not really moving grain, I would think.
Yeah, there hasn't been a whole lot of grain movement, really. We're shipping some out. A couple of the processors locally are bidding up a little bit. We've had a couple of people trying to source corn in the next 30 to 45 days. So, you know, it's definitely not dead out here as far as shipping it out. There's just not a whole lot of grain coming in by any means.
Chicago was pretty quiet today, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was pretty quiet. Or, you know, the range really wasn't too big, generally speaking, about 8 cents on nearby corn. I think that's as close a range as we've had in a while.
Yeah, and you think, speaking of range, different sort, but rains, how about rains? You think we'll get those over the weekend? And are you hearing good things from the meteorologist about wet weather?
Well, it sure looks like we're going to have a good shot at a couple of different rains over the next 3 or 4 days. I've heard anything from 2 inches plus, you know, on down to a half inch. So it's tough to tell what we're going to end up getting. But I think most producers in this area would be pretty happy to see it, especially if it comes anything like the last rain that came through, which I have a hard time believing it will. But the last rain that we got, you know, was just as gentle as could be. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens this weekend.
And what are your bids on the day?
Well, let's see, our cash corn, 6.45, fall, 5.22, and then cash beans, 14 and a quarter, and fall, 13.45.
And then staying with me for just a bit, put on your farmer hat. When you look at the growing season so far, what are you missing that you really need? Probably you've been putting a lot of corn in the ground, maybe getting ready to put beans in the ground at some point, I would think, in the not-so-distant future. You need water. What's wrong with the growing season? Anything?
Well, you know, there's no question that topsoil-wise, most everyone that I know is looking at a deficient situation. I think, you know, we've still got a few tiles running in this area, which is, I think, kind of an anomaly with a lot of people in the Midwest. There's not too many people that's got tiles running, but, you know, I think that a little bit of more moisture won't hurt anything, but a dry start to the corn crop isn't such a bad thing if you can get the corn up and going and start rooting down, but that'd be the main thing to me.
Thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
Thank you, Todd.
Thanks. That's Matt Bennett. He's with TGM in Chicago, rather TGM in Windsor, Illinois. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. In just a moment, we'll be joined by Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist.
WILL agricultural programs and services are made possible by the Friends of WILL and by Risk Management Commodities, Farm Credit Services, and Steel Star Metal Roofing and Siding. Thank you for your continued support.
This is the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. Time to check the weather forecast with meteorologist Peter Levitt. Good afternoon to you, Pete. Thanks for being with us today. Tell me about what the marketplace, or rather what the weather you think might do for us here in the very near future, please.
We're looking for a wet weekend and pretty generally wet. Heaviest will be in the west central portion of the Midwestern states Friday through Saturday, and then about Friday night through all the way through Monday morning, we see the activity spreading eastward across most of Illinois, Indiana, and into Ohio. Heaviest in the northern half of these regions, probably most of the heaviest amounts generally north of I-70, but it'll be focused more in northwestern Illinois and up in that region. What we're concerned about a little bit is the not only the amounts, but the possibilities of some severe thunderstorms at times, especially over the southern portions of the state. Precipitation amounts through the Friday night to Monday period probably be well in excess of 1 inch, maybe up to 3 inches or more, which is a large number for the model forecast to be advertising this far in advance. We might sneak a little bit of good warm weather in on Saturday, especially in the southern half of the state. The warm front itself will lift northward up toward the Wisconsin border, but then that'll push southward Saturday night and Sunday, and the rain will come to the north side of that front with thunderstorm weather to the south. So a wet weekend is in prospect.
In prospects here, what about in the northwestern part of Iowa, Minnesota, where it's been dry since last fall?
Yeah, that'll get some good moisture, too, I think, on this one. Especially Iowa and southeastern Minnesota should do pretty well. And looking a little farther ahead, we see activity next week working pretty well through the Canadian prairies, and some of that dipping down into the upper Midwest and northern plains. That is the dry area, but we expect this pattern to shift a little bit westward as we move into this next week. And by the way, we're not through with these shots of cold air coming down. We mentioned that a couple of weeks ago, not to give up on the cold weather because of the warm March, and here we are. Next Wednesday, Thursday, when the rain's clear in the Midwest, we'll see another cold shot. Doesn't look as cold as this last one, but we will get down, I think, to frost or freezing temperatures pretty well in the northern third of the region.
All right. Anything on the global front that we need to watch before I let you go?
No, global weather actually looks pretty good. Pretty good all around. Good moisture in Europe, a little cold there. Good moisture in the FSU down through most of the Middle Eastern states. Morocco actually got some rain for wheat. Monsoon is at bay right now. That doesn't show up till June, so it's hot and dry in India. China looks good. South Africa may be a little dry. In South America, Brazil had a little bit of drier weather coming. They got some showers down there. They'll get a few more next week. Argentine had good showers.
Thanks so much, Pete.
Mm-hmm.
Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, and that wraps up this edition of the Thursday Closing Market Report.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.